The first reading is from Proverbs, chapter 31, beginning at verse 10. A wife of noble character, who can find? She is worth far more than rubies. Her husband has full confidence in her and lacks nothing of value. She brings him good, not harm, all the days of her life. She selects wool and flax and works with eager hands. She is like the merchant ships, bringing her food from afar. She gets up while it's still night. She provides food for her family and portions for her female servants. She considers a field and buys it out of her own earnings. She plants a vineyard. She sets about her work vigorously. Her arms are strong for her tasks. She sees that her trading is profitable, and her lamp does not go out at night. In her hand she holds the distaff and grasps the spindle with her fingers. She opens her arms to the poor and extends her hands to the needy. When it snows, she has no fear for her household, for all of them are clothed in scarlet. She makes coverings for her bed. She is clothed in fine linen and purple. Her husband is respected at the city gate, where he takes a seat among the elders of the land. She makes linen garments and sells them, and supplies the merchants with sashes. She is clothed with strength and dignity. She can laugh at the days to come. She speaks with wisdom, and faithful instruction is on her tongue. She watches over the affairs of her household and does not eat the bread of idleness. Her children arise and call her blessed. Her husband also, and he praises her. Many women do noble things, but you surpass them all. Charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting, but a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Honour her for all that her hands have done, and let her works bring her praise at the city gate.
Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church.
Thanks be to God.
It's a reading from Acts chapter 16, beginning at verse 11. From Troas we put out to sea and sailed straight for Samothrace, and the next day we went on to Neapolis. From there we travelled to Philippi, a Roman colony and the leading city of that district of Macedonia, and we stayed there several days. On the Sabbath we went outside the city gate to the river, where we expected to find a place of prayer. We sat down and began to speak to the women who had gathered there. One of those listening was a woman from the city of Thyatira named Lydia, a dealer in purple cloth. She was a worshipper of God. The Lord opened her heart to respond to Paul's message. When she and the members of her household were baptized, she invited us to her home. "If you consider me a believer in the Lord," she said, "come and stay at my house." And she persuaded us. Hear what the Spirit is saying to the church. Thanks be to God.
May the words of my mouth and the thoughts of our hearts be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, our rock and our redeemer. Amen. Well, from our readings, it seems that apparently women who sell cloth were essential throughout the history of salvation. Well, Lydia, for example, was the first Christian convert in Europe, and the noble wife of in Proverbs was the ideal for Israel's households, nurturing faith and resilience. And, well, we read that she also sold cloth, or it seems more accurately, linen garments. So there must be something about the way women use clothing for the furtherance of God's kingdom. And my own wife at the moment packs clothes, so maybe she's in that tradition. Or maybe the trade in clothes was just an economic activity that was more likely to be undertaken by women. Maybe when we hear of strong women of the faith, it just happens that they were also dealing in clothes. In any case, it indicates that on this earth, faith, home, and work are all closely interwoven. But before I get onto that, I want to say a few words about the passage from Proverbs that we just heard on the noble wife or the woman of valor. I had not really wanted to preach about it, not really. But then I thought, since it's there in the lectionary, and I thought I better, you know, don't shy away from a difficult passage. Because it feels a bit like mansplaining, a man talking about the stuff women do. So maybe I'm not the right person to talk about it. On the other hand, I know that quite a few people are uncomfortable with the passage. The mixed views on the passage are particularly strong among women, I have realized. Some say that this passage portrays an impossible ideal. Others say that it sets an expectation that the woman of the house has to do everything while the husband goes off to the city gate to engage in politics and socializing. Some studies relying on Mesopotamian sources say that the passage may recommend playboys to get a financially independent woman so that the man can be free from any household responsibilities. And well, others see the passage a lot more positively. They argue that it sets an example of women being involved in business and the workforce. Still, others argue that the passage shows that there can be plenty of opportunities for women at home. So some regard it as showing the value of women. For some, it is a feminist passage. For others, it's hopelessly patriarchal. So note that it is mainly women arguing so much about this passage. So maybe with all the disagreement, I as a man can dare to say something about it nevertheless, since the women can't agree. The one thing I want to do is to go to the first verse of chapter 31. This verse reads, "The sayings of King Lemuel, words his mother taught him." And then it begins the chapter. So this is the advice of her mother to her son. In other words, the description of the woman of valor is a mother-in-law talking about her daughter-in-law. It's a mother's description of the ideal wife for her son. Maybe it makes sense to you now. With that, a few women here probably are thinking about their mother-in-law. What would have been her expectations? I hope you can see something valuable but also honest in that mother-in-law. Setting this passage in the wider book of Proverbs, we should note that near the beginning of the book, there's the advice of a father to his son about being a wise man. And here at the end, we have the advice of a mother to her son about valuing a wise woman. Possibly it might even be something of an advice from a mother to a daughter. And if you look at the advice to a son at the beginning, you'd also note that quite a bit of that is difficult to attain to. So I think overall, Proverbs contains the advice of older men and women to the next generation on how to live a good and a wise life. Both at the end and the beginning, the book mentions the fear of the Lord, or reverence of God, which is the beginning of wisdom. So this poem here about the woman of valor is about a woman who takes God's wisdom and translates it into practical decisions of everyday life. Faith and wisdom need to be lived out in our day-to-day. A wise person integrates what they do at home, in the wider family, in the community, and at work. What we do in these areas matters. All spheres of life need to be infused with God's wisdom. For example, work is not just a way to get money for the other areas of life. No, there's value in working and doing the things that we do well. But work cannot be the end-all and be-all of our existence. We are not defined by our career. And as we all know, family is important and an area where we have responsibility, but also a place of contentment and close relationships. Nevertheless, family life cannot be separated from life in the community. Through the family, we have interactions with so many others, and through the family, it also informs our participation in decision-making for the community and, in a sense, also even the political process. In the Christian era, the church probably sits somewhere between community and family. It's a place where we live out our faith and where we are part of God's family, together following Jesus. And just as in the community and the family, there are also many small and large practical tasks and decisions that are important in church life. There's some work involved in making church church. And so, for example, being there and helping with morning tea or any of the other tasks is part of living out our faith. The book of Proverbs and the Bible as a whole give us guidance on how to integrate faith in the whole of our lives, so that it is not just a little bit of spirituality that we put on top of our life. No, faith is to be lived out. Now, even the small menial tasks can be done with faith. For example, Martin Luther famously suggested that a father who is washing nappies and doing it for the glory of God is indeed praising God through this task. Doing the dishes may be a tiresome task, but if it is seen within the wider context of living a life infused by God's grace, this too can be useful and done for God's glory. Of course, our faith doesn't just change the way in which we look at our tasks, our attitude to what we have to do. It also has a profound impact on the decisions we make, what we dedicate our effort, our time, and our money to. Now, something has to be mentioned here because we see that life is lived out in daily life. Nevertheless, it has been a tradition in the church for centuries that there have been men and women who decided to dedicate their life to God and live an ordered life with regular times of prayer. At times, those people decided to withdraw from society and lived in communities. That was the monastic way of life. It gave order to life, order that was specifically grounded in the praise of God and patterns of a holy life. Now, monastic life was particularly strong in the Middle Ages. Nevertheless, we all know that monastic life was not only good, but was also open to abuse and repression, at times even elevating monks and nuns above the common people. So, even with those restrictions, the church still gained through it, particularly through the continual focus of integrating prayer and common life. Of course, ancient Israel was a society, in contrast, that was far more grounded in the household. So it didn't have many holy people set apart. There were the occasional, like the prophet or so on. But overall, it was far more that life was lived in family and community. That's also the tradition of the Protestant church. In the midst of life, we are part of God's kingdom. Follow God's guidance and give praise to God. The Bible and the book of Proverbs encourage us to order our lives according to God's will in the home, family, and wider community, right in the middle of life. Now, for me, that's a bit more realistic than a monastic life, and I think for many of you as well. We are encouraged to form godly habits, to see the world with God's eyes, and to decide with godly wisdom, taking our concerns to God in prayer. Now, as we read in the book of Acts, when Lydia believed the good news in Jesus Christ, she didn't just have some spiritual warm feelings and then continued her life as she did before. We read that her entire household was baptized with her. Now, we don't know what sort of woman Lydia was, whether those other members of the household followed out of conviction or because Lydia expected them to, and now you're getting baptized. Whatever the exact circumstances, for her, the good news of Jesus Christ meant that things were changing in the family. It also meant that she showed hospitality to other believers who now were part of her wider family, in a sense. So she used what she had to serve the church and be part of the church. So the question is, given our own talents, our situation, our context, how do we intentionally live a life that places value on what really matters, a life that is full of wisdom and reverence of the Lord? Our life is to be purposeful, whether it continues slowly with little change or whether it's turned upside down by joy or by great grief or confusion. But when any of those big events happen, then we can still find strength in the one who is with us always. Our life is to be a response to what God has done for us, and God is still doing continually for us. Amen.